it's Diana gone. There she is in the corner. So this next one by Diana Hurst is called Journey with a Goldfish, and I know she wants to say a little bit about it, so maybe I shouldn't say anything, but this is kind of what I thought. This is one of three sonnets in the final eight, but each of them is in a very different style, different subject, different tone, and they really prove how capacious and adaptable even now the definitive 14-line sonnet is, and how differently it can be used. I thought this was interesting in a number of ways. There's no end rhyme, so in a way it's a sort of free verse poem, but it's in a sonnet form. It's very conversational, it's almost prose-like. Indeed, the poem openly references Ian Forster's novel, and it reads like an ultra-condensed novel in a way. But it also elides seamlessly from the past, present to the past, and then back again. And it brings with it something of the ache of that past, those memories, as Candice's poem did as well, but this is in a very different way. So we very much look forward to hearing from it, Diana, and congratulations.
Well, thank you, Ivanhoe. I knew of you, and it was mainly through Pam, so thank you for inviting
me. Where have you come from today?
I've come from Sudbury, not that far. but discovered Ivanhoe and the bookshop and everything, and I thought, you know, I could come and live here. Anyway, some of you know that I did a course on Ian Forster at Madingley in Cambridge last autumn term, and I wanted to find out about Forster as a musician. I was interested in the way he wrote and whether he, because I knew he was interested in music, but whether he was a practicing musician. And so I contacted a composer who I used to work with called Gerard McBurney, because I knew his family had known Forster when he was young. And Gerard came up with half of this story. And then, I kid you not, the next day I was reading Where Angels Fear to Tread, and I saw what has turned out to be Forster's side of this story. So here we are, Journey with the Goldfish. Through the fertile murk of unchanged water, a blur of light approached and then took shape. A goldfish pressed against the algae-ridden glass. Morgan stared. Suddenly, the goldfish took him by the hand and led him out into the streets of Cambridge, through countrysides and beauty, lost to miscalled progress and the motor car, and back through love, through undeveloped hearts, to Lilia's dining room in Monteriano, where another goldfish swam, gaping at the guests. The 60-year-old ache was fresh. Unnoticed by his side, the young boy tugged his sleeve. "That's my goldfish. She's called Jill."
Very clever, that. Very subtle and very clever. The elderly man, who's 1 minute in his head, 7 years old or whatever, and then he is 7 years old, standing beside him, tugging his... It's very clever. I love that. And then the next one. Hello, Leslie. I haven't said hello yet.
Hi.
Is Leslie Tate's Taking the Air. I haven't got very much to say about this, because you'll notice that the nearer we get to the top, I have less to say about them. That's because the poems speak for themselves. It's a very skillful, subtle and understated poem about balance. And flow is a word that I think is in the poem. It's about balance and flow from one thing to another, in my view, about from singing a song, riding a bike, one line into another, and life itself. It's musical and memorable in every sense. Leslie, we'd love you to read it to us, and well done.
I've got a copy of this poem. So it's very hard.
Interactive.
I just think it's hard when people read something and then you can't see it. But if you don't want to look at it, and believe the spirit of poetry is about inspiration and craziness and so on, well, you don't have to have it. Everybody got one? So on our street in Berkhamsted, there are two opera singers, and the chap comes down on a fold-up bike down the hill to the station because he's going to the E&O or Covent Garden. They're top singers, and he sings the arias that he's going to deliver. And by the way, the reason he does this, because we've had him round to dinner, is because they've got three children their life is utterly hectic, and they get almost no time whatsoever to practice their music. So he's practicing as he goes down his bike. The heart of this poem actually is the idea that is the horse and rider idea. Who's in charge? So when he's riding his bike, does he ride the bike or does the bike ride him? As he sings his song, does the song sing him or does he sing the song? It's one of Michael Donohue's poems, the first one in this thing about in his collection Machine, where he describes a bike. It's also in Yeats, of course, a body. To music of brightening glance, how can we tell the dancer from the dance? That kind of idea. Okay, so taking the air. Downhill, balanced, leaning on the pedals of his fold-up bike, he rides bel canto as his voice pitches song. Three children, recordings, a wife at Covent Garden, pushchairs, shopping trips, and it's a matter of breathing. The qualities of wheel spin, traction, pressure, and the slight adjusting touch lead, as they happen, to the held note, counting the O-mouth, the steer, and the entry two-way into elements of flow. Riding every note, singer or sung, he looks both ways, from first tune to choral, lullaby to leader, he's in demand. The bike's his dummy run, his line followed back to high spot, climax and grip. Himself or the music, rider or ridden, he completes his song with park life, outings, supper times, stories into bed.